Craig Foster is ex-Socceroo. He's my colleague at Stan Sport. He's an activist for human rights and the welfare of refugees. He joins us now. Fozzy, how you doing, mate?
Hello, Maximilian. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm very good, thanks. It's nice to chat to you. I mean, have you found that out of this, so much has been made of other parts of the story, and obviously it's an interesting story for lots of different reasons, but the one thing that has been highlighted for a short amount of time, but now almost being forgotten about already, is the plight of normal human beings who are stuck in this hotel?
Yeah, look, sport can do this from time to time, and it's important that, the visibility that sport brings can also, in these times, create some social good, and certainly Novak Djokovic being what I think is ridiculously locked up has demonstrated the mandatory detention centre that Australia has developed over a number of decades. And as I think much of the world has now come to realise, and thankfully many more Australians, they should have already known, but that kind of goes to the nature of this regime, is to silence these refugees, to hold so much power over them that they can't even tell their own story. Otherwise, they're threatened with deportation. So they languish in these hotels. They've been there almost 9 years, as now as Australians are hearing. And that at least is positive, that more people know. The question is, what are they going to do about it? And all of us need to turn around, at this point in time and say, come on, I mean, it's just extraordinary. Now, 9 years is the anniversary on July 19th this year. There's 33 men in there who were on Manus Island, mostly, I think, Nauru. They were on the island prison that we built. And now they've been for in excess of 12 months locked up in tiny rooms. It's just extraordinary.
Foz, you mentioned silence and you mentioned the regime that creates that. What do you think it says about our media and political and social environment that it takes a scenario with a high-profile sports star to get a grasp of something that has been going on for so long?
Yeah, that's a good question. It highlights it. That's the answer. What it shows is that there is something going on in this country which the vast majority of Australians won't agree with, and yet many people who know what's going on have accepted it, said nothing, and done nothing about it. And one of the reasons is because the propaganda that these poor people have experienced has been, I think, perhaps unprecedented in recent decades in Australia. Australia has become convinced, much of Australia has, that these people were, and now we can have a list, right? You can say A, B, C, D, or all of the above. It doesn't matter what you put there. This is border and immigration politics 101, Australia style. Well, they're coming to take your jobs. Okay, no, they're not doing that. Okay, well, now they're coming and they're criminals. Well, no, that's not true. So they're coming to be welfare people. Well, that's clearly unlikely, given most of the wealthiest people in the country are refugees. Well, they're coming to, so the point is that this has just been propagated over and over and over again. Actually, it started in about 2001 with the Tampa, right? So we're talking now about, over 20 years. And what I've seen during that period is if you tell people, they can be false messages, they can be complete lies, doesn't matter. If a significant section of the media supports them and propagates them and just regurgitates, what politicians say without challenging them on these issues, then it gets into the national psyche. And Australia has a complex immigration history. Right since the White Australia policy, and then the Yellow Peril in the Vietnam War, and then, the Cambodians or Indochina are refugees in the early 90s. There is a part of our national psyche which we have to challenge and we have to overcome, and that is where successive prime ministers throughout our history since Federation have been able to trigger a section of the community through fear-mongering, with this xenophobic messaging. It's something we see all around the world, I must say, but certainly in the national psyche here. And these poor refugees have been right in the center of that phenomenon. And it's become a parody these days. And yet, politicians, including Scott Morrison, must feel as though it still works because they still go to this old, this old you know, statements of terms of border security and, you know, and tough on borders and strong on borders and all of this rubbish, when, you know, having immigration policy is obvious, but having people terrorized and tortured for almost a decade long now to implement that, you know, that's just absolutely absurd. And it's time that it was called out. So the fact that Novak Djokovic was there, from my perspective, he's only there 4 days, was in some ways fantastic. Because if the number one tennis player in the world, if the prime minister and the government of the day, and they're only the latest one, if they feel that there's value in the Australian public mind by locking up and taking his belongings, you know, and not allowing him on Orthodox Christmas to see a, you know, to see a religious authority and all of these things, this is exactly what we've been doing to everyone for a very, very long time. So in some ways, it's been very, very positive.
Do you... the worry, Foz, is that, and you say the reasons why, but like politically, like a hostile environment for immigrants is a vote winner. I've seen it in the UK, you know, and like I think from my perspective, you know, there are obviously in the UK now, there are lots of refugees, asylum seekers on dinghies that are unsafe, drowning in the English Channel. And the first reaction in my mind is compassion, you know, before anything else. It's just these poor, you know, poor people who've drowned. But that isn't the first reaction of everybody. How do you change the hearts and minds of people in Australia, the UK, or wherever, to not just instantly think, not to go, do you know what? I want to vote for somebody who wants a hostile immigration policy.
That's a really difficult question. And we haven't found the answer yet because, as you say, it's been growing around the world. And, you know, in the Australian context, you know, the Prime Minister of the time, John Howard, when Tampa happened in 2001, actually lied and said that innocent people were throwing their children overboard. And that was proven in Senate estimates under questioning in Parliament to be false. And that played a very significant role in him being returned into, you know, into the prime ministership. So that playbook preceded him, and it has continued to today. And not, Djokovic is part of that, but only, you know, in a very small way, of course. But nevertheless, you know, the way that we, you know, what we've tried to do in recent years is to humanize these people in order to get them out. And the thinking is that then we can deal with the policy. You know, if you try to argue the policy with people and the broader issues, at the, you know, then that can take, we don't know how long that's going to take. You know, these are very significant issues. And, you know, my view is whenever everyone wants to, you know, interrogate the policy that we currently have, I would always say and continue to, hang on a minute, that's cool. We can agree, disagree, we can argue. That's what we should be doing. But let's do it after these people get out. And the main point about these guys, I think, is the compliance in a broad respect, that is, of the media. So much of the media has just been regurgitating this garbage that you know, so many ministers and prime ministers have been propagating. But also the complicity of... you know, just printing lies. You know, these guys have come to Australia. They needed medical treatment. Not that they were even guaranteed medical treatment. They were in chronic need of treatment after many years, you know, in a Pacific prison that we built, and they have been denied it. The worst thing is, Max, that when I went, you know, over 2 years ago, I think it is, over to Port Moresby to work out what the hell was going on. I kind of thought, look, it's offshore, and my job is just come back and speak to the Australian people, tell them about it, and it's going to end. The worst part is that these people are now on Australian shore. They were in Brisbane, they were in Melbourne, they were in Darwin, there were some in Adelaide and so on. They're actually in Carlton, and you know, people are going past them on the tram every day, and the refugees are standing at the windows trying to say, can you look at us, please, for a moment? And so I had to kind of realise that even though they're here, you know, too much of Australia still is not moved by them. And that's a very kind of confronting concept, if you think. Like, look where they are. They're actually right in our second biggest city, right in the heart of the city. And it just goes to the nature of the propaganda that they have experienced. That's what I think in the end of the day is important. we need to push back on false messaging. We need to make, you know, it just shows how invidious, you know, the drip, drip, drip of lies can be in political life and in cultural life. And we haven't pushed back enough on that. And we're at a position where genuinely good Australians, and there are tens of millions, actually are prepared to let them rot because they are convinced that these people are something they're not. I mean, it doesn't matter what they are. They shouldn't be rotting. But the point is they have, you know, they don't care enough about them because they've been convinced that these people are somehow wrong or somehow unworthy. And that's an extraordinary thing to witness. It, you know, the power of the media is incredibly important.
Foz, you speak so compassionately and eloquently and compellingly about this humanitarian situation. You're also an international footballer. We see our Prime Minister infiltrating sporting events and commentating. We sing national anthems. The Djokovic situation pertains to the Australian Open and immigration. And yet many, many people will say to somebody like you, stick to sport. Craig,
it's the first text we've got from someone called DK Muzzer saying, keep to football, you know.
And we see it, Foz, throughout the world. We see this as a response to people who are trying to persuade in humanitarian issues, often not even political issues. Yeah. You must have experienced that kind of retort from people many times. How do you deal with that?
Yeah. Oh, gee, I laugh, quite frankly. I think that we all have responsibilities. You know, it just doesn't matter what industry you're in. You know, we are citizens, okay? And all citizens have a responsibility to participate in political life, in social life, and to provide their views. And I would imagine for most of us to try and do what we can to improve our own society and that of other humans around the world. Like, it's really that simple, right? So sport has propagated this bizarre proposition that you know, that it's neutral and not political. The points you raised about Scott Morrison going into dressing rooms, calling the NRL and saying that they should have the national anthem, you know, criticising Cricket Australia for questioning, you know, issues around Indigenous Australia on Australia Day. They're great demonstrations of the endemically political nature of sport. Sport is part of social and cultural life. That means it is by definition political. One thing I would say about Scott Morrison is this, that when I, you know, this has really been a great example of what he's done to Novak Djokovic, okay? There was no need for him or the refugees, but there's no need for him to be locked up. I mean, that was bizarre. What happened that, however, it is normal. So, you know, the fact that we detained him, took all his belongings off him, kept him for 8 hours and essentially interrogated him and so on, he's the world number one tennis player. Just demonstrates what we do to others. People might then question, well, geez, I mean, if we can do that to him, what are the other poor people experiencing? It's horrific where we've got to. But the fact that he's put him in there was deeply political. He felt that he could get some political leverage out of it. That's clear to me. And I think throughout his recent, you know, conduct and many of the issues that he's waded into. But the day after, what was interesting, and this is a sport program, so he went on to the Ashes coverage and, you know, sat with the legendary Gilly, and, you know, and within a 24-hour or 48-hour period, he demonstrated very clearly how he utilizes sport for his own political advantage. And it's certainly not about sport. What's happened with Djokovic was political, and going on the Ashes was political. So at the same time as, like, many prime ministers in a country where sport is a very important cultural phenomenon, you know, he's done so. I think he's shown both sides of the coin as to how he considers sport in that way. So in my view, if I was in the NRL, I'd be saying he never comes in the dressing room again, because what he's done to Djokovic is just an absolute disgrace. But of course, as a refugee advocate and human rights advocate, I know that what they did to Djokovic is nowhere near as bad as what we do to other much more vulnerable innocent people, and that's an important aspect here.
And people without recourse to legal means and all the things that, that Djokovic has. Yeah. Got to leave it there, mate, but look, keep fighting.
Okay.
Mark from Prairie Wood says, I've heard Craig talk along about stuff in football and general life. Craig Foster for PM. Look, I would vote for you, Craig. If I'm giving voting rights. Yeah.
Three.
Cheers, Fozzie.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Good man.